Hey, Ronaldo said. How's it going? Ronaldo. The blood rushed to Cindy's head. She turned her back to Carenza and the wine guy, who were only about 10 feet away and could hear everything. How'd you get this number? You're a hard woman to find these days. Yeah, well, I changed my cell number, so what's this about? Wow, Ronaldo said. He seemed startled by her tone. Well, I'm sorry to bother you. I know things didn't end super well between us. No, they did not. But I got remarried and have a baby daughter and everything. Oh, nice. I appreciate hearing that you actually followed through with that. Is that all then? Well, as it turns out, I owe you $120 and I wanted to make sure you get it. That's the main thing I'm calling about. What do you owe me $120 for? You know that restaurant reservation you made, like 3 years ago? They called me and said I'm invited, and I'm going with my wife. So I figured I'd better pay you back the deposit just to make sure we're square. That stupid bastard. She could feel both Carenza and the wine guy looking at her, but now she didn't give a shit. This situation called for some volume. No, no, that's my reservation, Cindy said, raising her voice. Well, they called me, on my house phone. Look, we were still married then. That used to be my home number, too. I was trying to save 2 spots so we had a better chance. At the time, she thought she was being clever by putting their shared house phone down as his number. Yeah, and they called my spot, and I didn't know it, but it's like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Cassandra's just over the moon about it. You know, it was her that suggested we pay you back your deposit. That's how grateful she is. No, I'm going. I made the reservation. It's not in your name. Why can't you just wait until your name comes up? Because she's my daughter, and I need to see her. Because who's your daughter? Eva Torvald. Now you're just making things up. I'm not. I thought you never had a kid and never wanted one. That's what you always told me for 5 years. For 6 years, actually. 6 years, counting the year before we were married. Well, I had one. And you what, gave her up for adoption? No. I left her and her dad. Oh, Ronaldo said. Oh. Oh, so her dad was your ex-husband from Minnesota. The one you never talked to, right? Okay. Yeah. Why don't you just go up to where she lives and knock on her door? I can't do that. I can't do that. I'm too scared to do that. I just want to see her at a distance. And she's never looked for you, never searched you out? If she did, I never knew it. So when's the next dinner? Tomorrow, right in the middle of South Dakota. We're flying into Pierre. Tomorrow? And you're just calling me now? It was hard to find you. Well, I'll be there. Let me talk to my wife. I'll be there. She hung up and copied his number from the phone's caller ID display onto her hand. She turned to see Carenza and the wine guy staring at her. What, Carenza said, was all that about? Cindy found it hard to look Carenza in the face when she told her whole story, and chose instead to stare out the dining room window at the boats on the lake. I'm so sorry, Cindy said to her friend. What for? Carenza said. I can understand why you wouldn't want to talk about it. You wanted us to get to know you as you, not as the mom of some famous person. Cindy exhaled. After decades away from the Midwest, she'd forgotten that bewildering generosity was a common regional tic. First the free home furnishings, now this. It was all lovely and weird. Thank you, she said. That's way more kindness than I deserve. Hey, we all got secrets, the wine guy said. I can't imagine, Carenza said to him, and then looked at Cindy. Let us know what she's like. Cindy couldn't believe these people. Later that night, when she was attempting to answer a question at Diana Vecchio's table about which Moscato on their wine list was the one that some rapper named Quasi sang about, Molly came up behind Cindy and hugged her. It felt like it did when her mother used to do that to her as a child, come up behind her and hug her for no reason. It always puzzled Cindy when her mom did this. call for you in the reservations line, your ex-husband. Cindy left the table immediately, without even saying excuse me, and ran to the phone in the office. Can't do it, Ronaldo said. I'm sorry, we already bought our plane tickets and everything.
What? I'll pay you back for the ticket.
I gotta prioritize my current wife over my ex-wife. That's all there is to it, he said. In the background, Cindy heard a woman say, Tell her she has a slot, she'll just have to wait. And Ronaldo repeated, You have a slot, you'll just have to wait. Fuck you, Ronaldo, she said. I'll see you there, and hung up. The last-second flight from Traverse City, Michigan, to Pierre, South Dakota, was going to cost her close to 2 months' rent, and the 6 a.m. departure meant she'd have to be up by 4 in the morning after working until midnight. Also, she checked flights from SFO, and both her flight and Ronaldo's flight had the same connection in Denver. They'd be on the same plane to Pierre. Cindy spotted Ronaldo from 100 feet away at the Denver airport, standing in line at the gate. It was weird to see him in person after 3 years of trying to forget about him, but it also felt a bit like only a month had passed. He was wearing a gray suit that she didn't recognize, had more gray in his beard, and looked as if he'd lost weight. He'd heard her coming up behind him and turned around. She was wearing an outfit she thought might make an impression on him, culled from her past life of means and expensive tastes, slate gray Donna Karan pencil skirt, white poplin shirt, closed-toe ivory pumps, fitted peplum blazer, and big black Prada sunglasses, looking damn good for someone on 3 hours of sleep, and she could tell from his expression that he thought she looked good too. Not that she wanted anything to happen, she just wanted him to realize what he'd been missing out on, and to keep realizing it every time he looked at her. You owe me for my wife's plane ticket, he said, not smiling. Whatever remote, lukewarm simmering still lingered in her heart for him, instantly vanished when he spoke. After all they'd been through, that was how he greeted her? Where is she? Cindy asked. She decided to sit this one out, Ronaldo said. She's extremely averse to confrontation. It was her call, not yours?
Correct.
Just seeing where you stand. Ronaldo looked at his ticket. What seat are you? Cindy said, 16B. I've got 4A, Ronaldo said. Okay, then. She saw his mouth open, and Cindy hoped that he wouldn't offer to switch with somebody to move closer to her. At this point, she already had enough from him. See you in South Dakota, she said, and walked to the end of the line, pulling a copy of The Economist from her carry-on. The next time Cindy saw Ronaldo was at the baggage claim in the tiny Pierre airport. He had a larger suitcase than she did, which wasn't typical for him. His new wife was apparently making him fancy. So where to now? Cindy asked him. She hated depending on him for all the information. I have no idea, he said. It's 1:40. I might just go check into my hotel. Which hotel are you staying at? Clubhouse Hotel and Suites. You?
Budget 5.
Just then, a young man in horn-rimmed glasses and a tuxedo walked past them, pivoted around on his shiny heels to face them, and asked if they were Ronaldo Reyna and his plus one. It pained Cindy to be plus one to her ex, but she nodded. 2 forms of ID, please, the young man said, holding out an iPad which had a credit card scanner attached to the side. And that will be 10 grand. You're with the dinner? Ronaldo asked. I guess I could assume, but I'd better be safe. Of course. I'm Yona Sawate. They each handed him everything he asked for. Split down the middle? Jonas asked, holding up the credit cards. Yes, Cindy said. So where is this happening tonight?
You will see.
You're driving us? You work for her?
Yes.
Can you take us to our hotels first? Ronaldo asked. Whatever you like, Jonas said, handing them back their cards. I will collect you each around 5 to arrive at the property by 6. Stepping out of the baggage claim in Pierre into the afternoon, August air, was like stepping into God's own dryer. Cynthia had only been to South Dakota once before, and didn't recall it being so hot or so flat. Whoa, someone left the heat on, Jonas Awate said as he led them across the parking lot. When nobody responded to the comment, he shouted, Humor! I've been up since 4 in the morning, Ronaldo said. Jonas motioned them toward a black Lincoln Town Car. There was tan dust on the wheels and the bottoms of the doors. A tall blonde guy with sunglasses and a perfume model's jawline sat in the front passenger seat with the window open. Jonas motioned toward the man, introduced him as a dinner guest named Holger Schmidt, and made introductions all around. Where are you from, Jonas? Ronaldo asked once they were on the road. Minneapolis, Jonas said. No, I mean originally. Jonas bit his lip. Cindy could tell by his expression that Jonas hated having this conversation. Ronaldo's dorky public chatter never endeared him to people as much as he thought it did. My parents were born in Eritrea, he said. He pointed to the climate controls on the dashboard. Hot, cold, indifferent? I'm a little warm, Cindy said, and Jonas turned on the air conditioner and passed her back a cool glass bottle of water with a white label that read, Buell R.O. What's Buell R.O., she asked. It's the purest water in the world. It's from a pristine deep well near Buell in northern Minnesota. Then they run it through a proprietary reverse osmosis and ion exchange purification system. Wow, never heard of it. It's the only kind of water Eva Torvald uses. So what's she like in person? She's like this water. That's all I will tell you. Cindy opened the bottle and held it to her lips. It tasted like thick, cool fog. You know, where they bottle this water, it's actually treated as hazardous waste under Minnesota law, Jonas said. It turns out, water with all of the impurities taken out is violently solvent. But bottling it, you let some bacteria settle in, and it mellows out. Jonas held out a bottle for Holger. No, sounds hideous, Holger said, with a slight German accent. Different strokes, said Jonas. Ronaldo nudged Cindy. Want to see a picture of my daughter? Nope, Cindy said. I'll see it, Holger said. Okay, sure, Ronaldo said, and passed his phone up to Holger. Holger looked at the picture for 2 seconds and passed it back to Ronaldo. I don't recognize her, Holger said. I go to all the clubs in Berlin and I've never seen her before. Ronaldo looked a little scared. Well, I kind of hope not. Just messing with you, Holger said. How about some music, said Jonas. Cindy's hotel room had a fake lemon smell and a squealy AC window unit. There was a stain on the carpet the shape of Wisconsin and scratches on weird parts of the walls out of the reach of adults or furniture. An old tube television was chained to a console by a metal wire and the remote was glued to the bedside table in some kind of plastic holder. When she was with Ronaldo, they never would have stayed in a place like this, and with his money, they didn't have to. Now it was the only kind of place she even considered, and she didn't care. She'd had decades of luxury travel, on her own and with her second and third husbands, and it didn't matter how expensive or opulent the room was, checkout was still always at 11, and when she walked out of the hotel doors, she was still herself. And the thread count and concierge service and private pools were no longer real. They were borrowed, like bodies, in a dream. What really broke Cindy's heart was when she'd see the bill and think of what wine they could have bought with that money. She believed that no hotel in the world, now known or yet to be conceived, could ever dominate your senses like a 1989 Chateau Margaux or pack more surprises into 20 seconds than a 2007 Le Cos Sacre Savanier. Every aspect of a hotel room was ephemeral. A great wine stayed with you forever. Therefore, she was absolutely okay with a hotel room that had a view of a parking lot, a highway, and a happy chef restaurant, all of it chastely, happily American, lacking in any glamour or pretense, apologizing for nothing. As she watched semi-trucks grumble to and from the restaurant, she begrudged all this lack of significance for one reason only, that this was going to be the place where she reunited with her daughter, somewhere out there in all this Dakota. She lay down on top of the spongy, flower-patterned comforter, but in spite of having slept only 3 hours, she wasn't tired. She had the pepper in her blood of a soldier being sent to war. There was nothing like home here. Just, perhaps, something to hold on to in the absence of one. Cindy was applying lipstick at 5:10 when she heard a knock at the door. "Miss Raina," a man's voice called out. Cindy opened the door to find a scruffy guy in a plain black suit standing in the dingy hallway. He had the vibe of a heavy metal drummer. He had a lot of rings on his fingers, and she bet there were tattoos under his jacket sleeves. He extended a ring-laden hand with a smile. "I'm Randy Drzelski," the guy said. "Your car is waiting." "Is Jonas here?" "Jonas is now just with Mr. Schmidt. I'll be driving you and Mr. Raina."
"Just a minute," Cindy said, leaving the door open.
Randy remained outside in the hall.
"You can come in. I just need to finish up."
Randy watched as Cindy finished with her lips.
"Wow, damn," he said.
"What?" Cindy asked.
"Oh, nothing," Randy said. "You just have real similar eyes to Eva's."
"Oh, what a funny coincidence," Cindy said. Cindy was relieved to see that she was the first person to be picked up. She took the front passenger seat next to Randy, who drove with one arm fully extended to the top of the steering wheel.
"How long have you worked for Eva?" Cindy asked as she buckled her seatbelt.
"I've worked with her the longest. I was the first hire when it was still just her and Elodie running things."
"How long ago was that?"
"I don't know, fall 2009 or something."
"What do you do for her?"
"I used to do a little bit of everything, but now I just do this, guest relations. It's my favorite part."
"So what's she like, Eva Torvald?"
"She's amazing." The love was evident in his voice, but after a breath he frowned. "Is this for a blog or something?"
"No, I work in a restaurant in Michigan. I'm just curious. Is she a good person to work with?"
"Yeah, or I wouldn't be here." He was all business now. "She's the best and expects the best."
Cindy put on a pair of old eyeglasses, which she kept in her purse as a backup and hardly wore.
"I wonder what her upbringing was like."
"She wouldn't want me to discuss it with guests," Randy said.
Cindy was surprised.
"Oh. Can you tell me where she's from?"
"Same place as me," Randy said. "A place that's gone."
Rinaldo was waiting under the porte cochere of his hotel, wearing a tuxedo, which made Cindy shake her head. He stared at Cindy when he got in the back seat.
"What's with the glasses?" he asked.
As they drove out of Pierre and into the country, Cindy looked out the window. The car dipped between green hills, where clumps of trees gathered in the acres of tall grass, like lost platoons from a defeated army. They saw a sign for the Crow Creek Reservation and, later, signs for something called Wall Drug. After a while, Rinaldo tapped the back of Cindy's seat.
"So what's new in your life?" he asked.
"Not much," she said, not turning around.
"Same, same."
"Boyfriend?"
"Just got a dog," she said. "A Welsh Corgi puppy."
"Ha! I thought you said you didn't want kids."
"What do you mean?"
"With a dog, it's almost like having a kid."
"No, it's not like having a kid," she said. "It's preferable in every possible way. That makes it like having a dog."
They turned down a paved two-lane road, and from the top of a gravy-colored hill, Cindy could see a valley lined with trees. They turned down a dirt road that jostled the car and made the fancy water in the drink holders quiver in sympathy. A wooden and barbed wire fence, which went off endlessly in both directions, enclosed nothing that Cindy could discern. Two men wearing suits and walkie-talkies with headsets stood by its gate, and Randy stopped the car when he approached them. "Rinaldo Raina and his plus one, Cindy Raina," Randy told them, and Cindy watched as the young men relayed those names back to a supervisor. Eva Torvald would now know that they were here. From the car they could see the top of a hill, with two long dining room tables covered in ivory tablecloths.
Those are Regency tables, Ronaldo said. Real nice. You can tell by the legs. Cindy had no idea when or where her pediatric surgeon ex-husband had learned about dining tables. As they drove past, they could see a small, diverse staff bringing ornate chairs out to the tables. The car stopped by an immense tent, maybe 100 feet long or more, which looked to Cindy like an Arabian tent for oil sheikhs. Next to the tent, there was a 2-story bus that said Wilshire Mobile Estates. She supposed that was Eva's private coach. Randy opened Cindy's door. He collected Cindy's and Ronaldo's cell phones after an armed man in sunglasses patted them down. He asked them to step into the tent for tea or cocktails and said that men's and women's washrooms were in the luxury bus. "Is Eva joining us for drinks?" Cindy asked. "No," Randy said. "She's very busy." "Where's the kitchen?" "Can't go there, ma'am." "Can you just show me where it is?" Randy got on his walkie. "Hey, Brock, got a guest here who wants to see the kitchen." "You got the guest's phone and camera?" Brock responded. "Yep." "Let me ask, who's the guest?"
"Cindy Reyna."
"Okay, one sec." Cindy watched Ronaldo proceed into the guest tent where the drinks were being served. She wasn't able to see inside in the brief time he'd pulled the flap aside. "Is this a strange request?"
"Not really," Randy said. "People ask to see the kitchen all the time."
The walkie crackled. "That's a negative."
"Okay," Randy said, and then looked at Cindy. "Sorry."
Cindy turned her back to the tent. "What are you up to now?"
"I have to greet the late arrivals," Randy said, looking at the sky, where a bright yellow and green hot air balloon hovered against the blue. "Depending on what we learn about our guests, they may not merely get picked up by a car at the airport."
"May I join you?" Cindy asked. "I'm done hanging out with my ex-husband in enclosed spaces."
"You might get dirty," Randy said.
Cindy followed Randy down a wooded hill to the edge of a wide, brownish-blue river. Fallen branches, shrubs, and saplings grabbed at them. There didn't appear to be a trail, but Randy seemed to know where he was going. The last time Cindy had been in the woods was the previous summer, when some of the girls from work rented a cabin upstate, and she hardly even went outside the whole time. If they could see her now. A sharp twig scratched her calf. She removed her heels and mud rose between her toes. It was exhilarating. She stopped near the river's edge when it started to get muddy, but Randy charged on ahead, tan streaks smearing across his black pant legs. "There they are," he said, pointing at the river. A red canoe with 2 people in it was making its way across the water toward them. Randy trudged back into the woods, toward a tree with a black ribbon tied around it. How he knew where all these things were, Cindy couldn't fathom. The boaters had landed. They were a young, fit-looking couple in jeans, plaid shirts, and life jackets, but were dirty and wet and looked like they hadn't slept in days. "Now what?" the woman said, collapsing on the shore. "Okay, the next thing on the list is this," the man said, sitting down in the muddy grass, pulling a laminated card from his cargo pants. "It just says, Quiet Dog Tree." The woman sat up and stared into the forest. The man continued to look at the card, repeating the phrase to himself. "There it is," the woman said, pointing up to the beach to her left. "Up there, the tree with the bark shaved off." "No bark. Oh, that was an easy one," the guy said, and he followed the woman up into the woods near where Randy and Cindy were hiding. The couple knelt by the naked tree and saw a laminated card that read, "Look up." "Welcome to the dinner," Randy said, walking toward them. "Follow me for tea and cocktails." The man and woman shrieked and hugged each other. They said they'd been offered an adventure package when their reservation was accepted, which meant that they had to find their way here from their home in Chicago using only clues and non-motorized transport. They said it took them just under a week. "What are your names?" Cindy asked them. "Will and Katie Prager," the young man said, pride evident in his phrasing, which was sweet. "Recently married?" Cindy asked. Yeah, Katie Prager said. This is our honeymoon, actually. Our friends did a Kickstarter for us, once we heard our reservation was accepted. It turned out they put their names on the list long ago, and had always planned to have their wedding just before the date they'd been chosen to attend the dinner, whenever that would be. On the way back up, Will also mentioned that he dated Eva for a minute during a really dark time, back in high school, but that apparently had no influence in moving him up the list. I signed up the day the reservation website opened, he said.
Maybe she just wanted a certain combination of people, Randy said, but I can't speak to that.
Minutes later, Randy was leading Cindy across a field to where the yellow and green striped hot air balloon was landing. A big guy with loose cotton pants, the colors of the Jamaican flag, and a T-shirt that read, "Where's the party?" hefted himself out of the basket as Randy met it with a stepladder. There were a number of Jamaicans in Charlevoix, and she really liked the one she had gotten to know. But she certainly didn't know enough to tell if this guy was actually Jamaican until he spoke.
"Whoa, that was something else," the big guy said.
"Nope," Cindy thought. "American. Boring." He helped his companion, a woman smaller than himself, but not small, out of the basket behind him.
"So this is the place, I take it. I was told to look for a long-haired guy in a dirty black suit."
"If your names are Ross Wally and Rashida Williams, yes, this is the place."
"Yeah, that's us," he said.
"Follow me for tea and cocktails," Randy said. "It's 20 minutes to the first course." While Randy led the newest couple to the tent, Cindy snuck up the hill to the tables and peeked at the names on the place cards. There were 16 in all, and Eva Torvald was not among them. She didn't eat with her guests, as Cindy had hoped. Cindy had unfortunately, but inevitably, been placed next to Ronaldo, so she switched herself to the other table and put her husband next to that Holger Schmidt guy instead. From the top of the hill, she could see both the river on one side and the sun setting on the other. She also saw two bearded men in fishing vests carrying a large blue cooler between them, and watched them as they walked the length of the tent and around the back. That must be where the kitchen was. She started her way down the hill. "Hey," Randy said, appearing from nowhere with a broad-shouldered, grim-faced young woman. "If you're not doing anything, can you help Maureen and me pick the corn for tonight's dinner?"
"Pick the corn?" Cindy asked.
"Maureen O'Brien," the woman said. "I'm an old friend of Eva's." It was astonishing to Cindy to meet all of these people from different parts of Eva's life. Going back how far?
"I met her when she was 16 and I was 24, Maureen said. "And yeah, corn."
Maureen pointed to a small cornfield, maybe 60 stalks, on a plot of land close to the farmhouse. "Eva first planted that corn 4 years ago. That's how long we've been planning to have dinner in this spot. Want to get to work?"
Cindy was tempted just to ask this woman a million questions about Eva, but she'd gotten dirty enough, and she'd hated cornfields ever since junior high, when her dad got her and her brother a summer job detasseling corn. It was supposed to teach them work ethic, but the pay sucked. The early mornings were worse, and because she wore short sleeves in an attempt to get a tan, she'd sliced her arms bloody at least twice a day on the corn leaves, which cut like fresh paper.
"I was actually going to freshen up a bit," Cindy said. Randy called for one of the security guys, a big galoot named Dougie, to accompany her to the luxury bus. The far end of the tent, where the kitchen was, remained at a distance. At 7:30, the 16 guests were seated for dinner. Cindy found herself between Ross Wally and a stunning black-haired woman named Ane Fihau, and across from a couple from South Korea named Ha Man-hee and Lee Mi-sun. It was clearly an international table. Holger Schmidt was now, after Cindy's switch, the only non-American at the other one. Ronaldo, of course, expressed shock that he wasn't next to Cindy, but when Holger told him to put a lid on it, he sat without another word. She spotted the canoe couple, Will and Katie, at Ronaldo's table. It looked like they had been supplied with formal wear in their size, but they still had the pallid, grooved faces of people who had been awake for days. Randy pushed in Cindy's chair, as other staff members did the same for the other guests. "I'll be your personal attendant this evening," he said. "There will be no substitutions or alterations to the menu, but anything else you may desire, please let me know."
"Is Eva coming out at all during the dinner?"
"If she does, it will be sometime after the third course," Randy said, handing Cindy a small, ivory-colored vellum card. "Here is tonight's bill of fare." Amuse. Thinly sliced fire-toasted pane de castagne with dry-cured pork shoulder, copa-style, from Eva's Berkshire pig, William. And alderman plum and ginger chutney. Pairing, 2012 Luciano Saiti Lambrusco Salamino de Santa Croce. First, pan-seared walleye, served filleted over golden bantam succotash, sweet corn, red onion, blue lake green beans. Pairing, 2009 Litterai Maize Canyon Chardonnay, Russian River Valley, California. Second, grilled venison served with grilled Moskvich tomatoes, wilted kale with sweet pepper jelly vinaigrette, house-made sweet pepper jelly and sherry vinegar and grapeseed oil. Pairing, 2005, Marcusson Blue Slide Ridge Pinot Noir, Sonoma Coast, California. Third, pavlova with today-picked South Dakota blackberries, served with a mini shot of chocolate habanero-infused dark chocolate ice milk. Pairing, 1990 J.J. Prum, Wellener, Sonnener, Riesling. Trockenbaron Auslese. Finish. Pat Prager's private recipe dessert with your choice. Kopi Luwak Coffee. 2002 Chia Jianjai Old Growth Shang Puer Tea. And or Ardbeg 1974 Provenance. Served neat. Cindy had been looking forward to the wine pairings the most. She'd hoped for more reds, but it wasn't meant to be with this menu. Two dessert courses. That was a new one. "Oh, fuck me," she heard a man say at the other table, loud enough to make her turn to see who it was. It was Will, the canoe guy. He was staring at the bottom of the menu, a distressed look on his face. It seemed to be a polite crowd, and the loud curse was met with murmurs of disapproval from both guests and staff. Will seemed like a sweet kid, but he needed to tone it down over there. "What are the fucking chances?" Will shouted. Holger glared at Will and said, "Shut your pie hole." God, she could propose to that man. The Amuse course came out. Two perfectly browned isosceles triangle toast points, thin as tortillas, framing a curl of bright pink ham, accompanied by a white ceramic spoon of pale red chutney. The Lambrusco followed, poured from a chilled decanter, which wasn't 100% necessary if the wine was properly stored. "What do you do?" Ross Wally asked Cindy. "Do you work here?"
"No, I'm a sommelier in Michigan. What about yourself?"
Ross Wally motioned to the woman on the other side of him. "Me and Rashida are licensed discard counselors. We can go into your home and tell you what you don't need."
"Wow, never heard of that. Does it keep you busy?"
"Man, you wouldn't believe," Ross Wally said. "Here's my card." He handed her a card the colors of the Jamaican flag. On one side it read, "Licensed Discard Counselor, Home or Office. Live simply, live well." And a phone number. On the other it read, "Use Ross Wally," in huge letters. "So," Ross Wally said, "sommelier, huh? What can you tell us about the wines on this list?"
"Well," Cindy said, "the 1990 vintage of this German Riesling is supposed to be one of the best in its history. The American Chardonnay, I've had a bunch of times, and it's very much to my liking. It's less oaky and alcoholic than a lot of domestic Chardonnays."
Cindy realized she was leaping down the rabbit hole of wine speak. She glanced up to make sure that her audience was still interested, and they were. Pretty much everything from Marcusson is a home run, if a bit spendy. And this organic dry Lambrusco should be perfect with copa. "Wow, okay," Ross Wally said. "I knew all that. I was just checking." She tore the cured ham in half with her knife and used a little plum chutney as a paste to affix it to a toast point.
"Is that what you were supposed to do?"
She saw Manhi across the table make his into a dainty sandwich. Before raising it to her mouth, she stared at the little pink, brown, and red bite in her hand. When Cindy had last seen her daughter, she was a whiny little alien who shit all day and cried all night out of hunger. Cindy did breastfeed her a couple of times, but she hated it. It hurt like hell. And whatever mother-child bond was supposed to explode in her heart during those moments just never happened. Now, somehow, here she was, being fed by her child. Objectively, it was astonishing. The tartness of the chutney, the saltiness of the cured ham, and the dry, earthy wine all locked together in a happy scrum, like brothers reuniting after a summer apart. She didn't believe that this course alone was $1,000 value, but she could have eaten an entire popcorn bowl full of it and not been satisfied. She felt the woman next to her, the one with the impressively obscure name, get up and take her wine glass with her. By the time she looked up, Ronaldo was sitting down in the empty chair, putting his napkin on his lap, setting his wine glass on the table where the woman's was. "There, that's better," he said. "Holger was hitting it off with Anya in the drinks tent earlier, so I hope you don't mind the switch." Cindy threw back the rest of her wine. "Wow, some amuse played, huh?" Ronaldo said. "You know we got to see Eva Torvald earlier? She popped in to get some tea. I was looking for you, but I couldn't find you."
"What?"
Cindy tried to stay calm.
"You got to meet her?"
"Well, not meet her, exactly, but see her up close. She just said hi to everybody." "Where'd you go, anyway?"
"When was this? Did she say she was going to come out here?"
Ross Wally nudged her. "Hey, don't get worked up. She just came in, got some tea, said hi, then left. It was like 10 seconds. That's all you missed." "It was pretty cool, though," Ronaldo said. "I'll say this," said Ross Wally. "She's another type of being. You can just tell. She ain't from where you and I are from. She's from somewhere else." The second course arrived. Two glistening little rectangles of white fish on identically sized mounds of yellow and red succotash. Manhi and Mi-sun across the table each took a bite, and Mi-sun snapped forward in her chair, clutching her head. Ross Wally glanced at Cindy.
"Maybe we should send this one back."
Mi-sun's face lifted, and there were tears on her cheeks, but she was smiling. Manhi was rocking his head back and forth, eyes closed, while he chewed slowly. Mi-sun wiped her eyes. Ronaldo tried his.
"Wow.
This is supposed to be the best area in South Dakota to catch walleye, and if that's why we're specifically eating here, I'd say it's worth it." Cindy hadn't even touched hers yet, and Ross Wally's plate was empty.
"That motherfucker was insane," Ross Wally said.
"But that was it? Just those two tiny pieces?" He called his personal server over, a young guy with long blonde hair. "Hey, Jordy, can I have seconds?" Jordy pursed his lips and shook his head. "Sorry, no can do." Ross Wally pounded his fist against the table, rattling everyone's wine glasses. "That's a fucking travesty, man, a fucking travesty!" Rashida put her arm around him and told him to chill. She saw that Ronaldo was closing his eyes and touching his temples as he chewed.
"Quit being annoying," she said. "This is indescribable."
"Indescribable," he said. "The corn, it tastes like golden sugar. The fish, it's like...
"Indescribable?"
He nodded. "I just wish Erin was here." That wasn't his wife's name.
"Now who's that?"
"My daughter? A-Y-R-E-N. It's an anagram of Reina. Erin Reina. She'd love this."
"Oh, God."
"She's a baby," Cindy said. "She loves her own snot." "But don't you think if she had something like this now, it could maybe change the course of her life?"
"I doubt it."
"Did you and Lars," Ronaldo said, "ever feed her anything like this? Just wondering if that explains it."
"I sure didn't," Cindy said. "Maybe Lars did. He probably did."
"Proves my point, then." Cindy poked Ronaldo's leg under the table with the butt end of her knife.
"Please don't bring up Eva again."
"You're here at my pleasure, you know," he said, and stabbed his last piece of fish with his fork. The walleye and succotash were, in Cindy's opinion, remarkable. The fish, maybe just an hour or two out of the river, was heartbreakingly tender, dissipating in her mouth like a spoonful of cream. Pairing-wise, the old-world-style Chardonnay was perfect. She tasted hints of gunflint and honey, just like a top-of-the-line Chablis. Still, this was all nothing that would make her openly swear at the table, but perhaps she was too distracted to submit to the unchecked enthusiasms of her fellow diners. "Randy," she said, calling him over, "is Eva coming out after this course?" "If she does, it'll be between the two dessert courses," Randy said. "She's way too busy in the kitchen until then." The third dish, a tiny cut of venison steak about half the size of a playing card, with tomatoes and sweet pepper jelly, was a different matter. The venison firm enough to meet your teeth and soft enough to yield agreeably in your mouth revealed subtle, steely new flavors with each bite. While the tomatoes were so full of richness and warm blood, it was like eating a sleeping animal. Their pairing, the light-bodied Pinot, didn't erase these senses. It crept beneath their power, underlining them. It was about as much flavor as 15 seconds were capable of. After one bite and one sip of wine, Cindy felt luminous and exhausted. Mi Sun and Man He were both rocking back and forth in their chairs, weeping. Ross Wally was rattling the table with his fists, screaming, "The injustice! The injustice!" while Rinaldo was slicing the venison into nearly diaphanous slivers, perhaps to make it all last longer. Yes, the dish was flawless, and the wine pairing was supernatural. But these people were out of control. Were they trying to emotionally justify the meal's price tag? Did they have too many cocktails in the drinks tent? It was a breathtaking meal, one of the best that Cindy had ever had. But the hysteria around her was making her brain red. "And now the first of the two dessert courses," Randy announced. He placed before Cindy a pavlova the size of a mini donut, with 5 blackberry halves clinging to its tiny plateau, and a copper shot glass filled 2/3 with a creamy dark brown liquid. "That's my personal favorite," Randy said, indicating the liquid. "Drink it immediately after you eat." Rinaldo was trying to cut his pavlova into quarters. "You know this is the longest I've been away from my daughter," he said. "I left home at 4:30 in the morning today. It's been 16 hours. 14, Cindy said. "This time zone's 2 hours ahead." She put the whole thing in her mouth, chasing it with half the shot of the spicy chocolate ice milk. "Whoa," she said involuntarily. "It's still the record," Rinaldo said. "Well, good for you," Cindy said. "I'd love to hear more about it, but I'm having such an interesting dialogue with Ross Wally over here." Ross Wally, at that moment, was bent over his empty plate, licking a blackberry stain. "It gives life!" he shouted. Cindy felt the staff behind her, converging and murmuring among themselves. Almost as quickly as she perceived it, Cindy turned and saw Jonas Awate standing alone between the tables. "Eva Torvald thanks you for coming to dinner tonight," Jonas said, pivoting as he spoke, looking each guest in the eye. "She regrets that she is too exhausted to join you all in person, but is so happy that you could share in what she told me has been her greatest dinner of all time. She's told me that even though you won't meet her tonight, she's telling you her life story through the ingredients in this meal. And although you won't shake her hand, you've shared her heart. Now please, continue eating and drinking, and thank you again." Cindy couldn't bring herself to applaud with the others. What an awful, insincere, lazy cop-out. She remained staring at Jonas, her heart gushing acid into her ears and eyes. She looked down the hill toward the luxury bus, and her eyes swept the decay of protocol around her. The Korean couple was lying on the ground, like toddlers spent by their own histrionics. Ross Wally was being physically restrained by his female companion, his arms flailing, knocking over a lit candle and a half-full wine glass. Rinaldo remained oblivious to all of this. "I still love you, you know," he said, slumping forward, belly full of alcohol and unrequited nostalgia. My wife only let me go on this trip with you because I told her it's what I needed to do to finally get over you. If she believed that, Cindy said, she's definitely too dumb for you. Looking around, she saw that the other servers, including Randy and Maureen, were occupied in helping Rashida Williams get Ross Wally under control. He was really pitching a fit about injustice. Everyone was captivated. Your secret's safe with me, you know, because I love you. I'll never tell anyone. If the last course comes, guard mine for me, Cindy said. I gotta go. She drank the last of the spicy ice milk and got up from the table, feeling the alcohol touch her limbs as she stood and dashed down the gentle slope of the hill toward the luxury coach. I'll be here, Ronaldo said. I'll guard it with my life. Approaching the bus, she slapped a mosquito on her arm. Hearing the noise, a husky tattooed security guy halted his long oval path in front of the tent to stare at her. Just using the ladies, she told him. She stepped inside the opulent vehicle. Even in the dim light, it looked fancier than almost any place she'd ever lived, and made her way past the bathrooms to the bedroom in the back. The door was ajar. It was dark and empty. Once she got to the second floor, she could feel that the bus was completely unoccupied. In fact, it looked as if it had barely been used at all. The counters and tables were empty except for a copy of an insurance form and a rental agreement. From the window, a small flickering light caught her eye. Sitting outside around a small fire pit behind the tent were three women. The night disguised their faces, but Cindy knew who was there. She played two versions of this night. Oddly, she'd always imagined it as night. Hundreds of times in the intervening years between the morning at Tetagouche Winery and that evening in South Dakota. In one of those musings, she'd approach Eva Torvald and say, "Hello, I'm Cynthia Hargreaves." And the two of them would look in each other's eyes, and the wordless mother-daughter gravity between them would instantly break the years of silence. She'd hold her daughter for the first time since she was a baby. And after wiping away each other's tears, they'd spend all night into the morning excavating their lost memories together. Perhaps Cindy would even move to Minnesota to be closer to her daughter and work for her impressive empire as a sommelier. Everyone would be so happy, and it would be the kind of touching human interest story that'd raise Eva's national profile. One could now add forgiving to her impressive list of characteristics. The more likely scenario was that Lars had interpreted Cindy's heartbreaking sacrifice decades ago as a bad mother's selfish mutiny. That was easy to imagine. Perhaps he'd spent Eva's entire life convincing her that somewhere her cruel birth mother still existed, as distant and unremarkable as a soldier in a foreign port. That would be how Lars would see it. And a father only needed to tell a little girl once that her real mother had abandoned her for breakable things to become unfixable. Downstairs, she removed her heels and spied out the bus door's window, waiting for the security man's loop to take him out of sight, then darted barefoot around the bus toward the fire. From a distance, she could hear the three people laughing. They appeared to be drinking beer and eating. The women started laughing again, but when they sensed someone approaching them, one of them stopped and sat upright. "Hey, who's that?" a woman's voice said. "Hi," Cindy said. "Hi," the woman's voice answered back. "What's your name?" Cindy moved closer to the fire, and with each step could see all three of them more clearly. There was a short, plump older woman with glasses and short hair, a husky, broad-shouldered young blonde, and another woman with a face she recognized from the internet. Cindy had never seen her own eyes and cheekbones on another living person before. They were more pronounced in the firelight, and coupled with Lars's nose, assembled a remarkable face from every angle. Cindy had seen that face before, when perfectly lit and airbrushed for glossy magazine pieces, but not the bags under the eyes, the smeared messy hair, the stained cargo pants, the scars on the forearms of the wide, dirty, bare feet propped up on a milk crate. Her daughter was the most stunning human Cindy had ever seen. Cindy had planned what she was going to say next for several years, but now that she was here, it was difficult to open her mouth. Her blood clawed at her insides as the words fell between her teeth. "I'm Cynthia," she said. "Cynthia Hargreaves." The three people around the fire looked at Cindy as if she had just said that the weather forecast predicted partly cloudy skies for tomorrow. "Hi, I'm Pat Prager," the older woman said, standing up and shaking Cindy's hand. This woman had a warmth about her. When she smiled, it seemed sincere and calm. The blonde girl didn't move from her chair. "Brock," she said. She pointed to a teenage boy cleaning dishes in the kitchen tent. Cindy hadn't noticed him before. "That's my son, Hatch, over there." "Hatch," Cindy said to herself. "He's named after a town in New Mexico," Brock said, and slapped a mosquito on her arm. "Fucking organic bug spray is for shit," she said to herself. Eva stood up and shook Cindy's hand. "Do I know you?" "I guess not," Cindy said. Hearing this young woman's words, seeing her face and touching her hand, she felt like she didn't know where she was, and that she was 1,000 miles from home, both of which her mind knew were objectively true, but now her heart translated those opaque facts into something moon-white and cold. "No offense," Eva said, sitting back down again. She stared back at Cindy as if studying a painting in a museum. "I meet a lot of people, and you paid today under the name Raina." "Married name," Cindy said, staring at Eva. Her brain, now simply overwhelmed, had somehow compelled her feet to quit moving. The security guy appeared behind Cindy and grabbed her arms. "Come on," he said. "You're not supposed to be here." "No, it's okay, Dougie," Eva said. And Dougie let Cindy go. "Sit down, have a grain belt. Cooler's to your left." Cindy took a beer from the cooler, and because there was nowhere else to sit, she sat down on its thick, white, plastic lid. "Sorry, we're out of chairs," Eva said. Pat stood up to give Cindy her chair, but Cindy pleaded for her to remain seated, claiming she was comfortable. "What are you eating?" was all Cindy could think to say. The food on their plates didn't look like anything they'd had at the dinner. "Steamed broccoli, mac and cheese, and a beer," Pat said, smiling. "We just sent up the second dessert course so we can finally eat now ourselves." "You don't want to miss Pat's bars," Brock said. "We drove her out here just so she could make them tonight." Cindy was transfixed on her daughter, barely listening to any of this. "Why are you staring at me?" Eva asked Cindy. She had the tone of someone who might have been asking that question to a small child. "I don't know," Cindy said, and stood up. "I should go." "No, stay," Eva said. "You've been trying to get down here since you first arrived. What's on your mind?"
"I just wanted to say, I used to know your father."
"Oh, cool beans." Eva had the vibe of a celebrity who had heard dozens of compliments and entreaties every day. This phrase had the pleasant, defensive feel of a much-used stock answer. Cindy took a deep breath. Maybe Lars never mentioned to her who her mother was. That seemed impossible to believe. "How is he doing?"
"Well, he's better. He's in a treatment facility in Michigan."
"Oh," Cindy said. She liked how Eva was like herself and didn't bullshit. She got right to the marrow of the conversation. But this was not what she expected to hear.
"Where in Michigan?"
"Marquette."
"Oh, Lars is in Marquette."
"No, Uncle Lars died when I was a baby. My dad is Jarl." Once again, not what Cindy was expecting to hear. She felt her hand over her heart.
"Oh, no. Lars died?"
"Yeah, did you know him too?"
Cindy's eyes glistened.
"He was the nicest man I've ever known," she said. How could their daughter be who she was now without Lars? It didn't make sense. Lars had loved their daughter with such intensity. Cindy remembered feeling alienated and jealous. Lars was one of the main reasons why Cindy was able to leave
and spend a lifetime not thinking about what she'd left.
He died when you were how old?
I don't know. I was a baby. I don't really remember.
Cindy thought she saw tears in Eva's eyes, but she wasn't sure.
Pat got to her feet and looked at Brock. Maybe we should start packing up the kitchen.
She gathered her beer and plate, glancing back at Brock as she trudged into the kitchen tent.
Brock didn't move, saying, "This is interesting."
Cindy couldn't tell whether she was being sarcastic.
Cindy didn't take Pat's vacated chair, choosing to stay on the cooler at a distance.
"So you don't remember him, then?"
Eva shook her head.
"Was your mom Fiona?"
"Yeah."
"Where's she these days?"
"She died when I was 14.
"Oh, my God, I'm sorry," Cindy said.
Fiona had been an able and enthusiastic babysitter, she remembered, but she didn't seem to like Cindy very much.
No matter now.
"It's all right," Eva said, and took a deep breath.
Her rangy posture had tightened up. She was now curled up in her chair like a child.
"Are you married?"
"Everyone always wants to know that."
"No, and no plans to.
Not that I'd announce it if I ever did."
"A boyfriend, even?"
Eva exchanged a glance with Brock, who smiled at her.
"Nothing serious."
Brock couldn't help herself.
"What about Adam?"
Eva kicked her cousin's chair. "You can go help Pat clean up the kitchen."
"He's totally cute, admit it," Brock said, standing. "And he makes awesome bread."
"See you, Brock," Eva said, and both she and Cindy watched Brock drag her ass into the kitchen tent.
"So there's a cute guy who's good in the kitchen?"
Eva sighed.
"He's very sweet, and he makes me laugh. I've always been a sucker for guys who make me laugh. That's all I'm going to say about it."
"Fair enough. And so you don't have any kids or anything?"
"Hell no."
"You sound pretty decisive about that."
"I am.
I think I would be a terrible mother, actually.
Brock over there, I don't know how she does it. I look at a baby and I'm like, ugh."
"I know exactly what you mean.
So how did you know my parents and uncle?"
Cindy had to take a breath before she spoke. She used to know what she was going to say on this night. She'd practiced it for years as she read about this young woman, this daughter of hers, as Eva became increasingly successful and famous. It was hard for her not to feel proud that some of herself was in that extraordinary creature on everybody's wish list. Many times when Eva Torvald came up in conversation somewhere, Cindy wanted to blurt out, "That's my daughter," because of what it would say about her. Because, of course, acquaintances and friends would regard her differently if they knew her daughter was the iconic chef behind the most difficult dinner reservation in the world. And having eaten her food, it was clear to Cindy that Eva was deserving of all the hype and the swooning. Until a mouth closed around a fork or a spoon, Eva fought for control of every variable. She seemed to conjure miracles from crops, animals, bacteria, fire, water, and even the molecules in the air, apparently leaving no detail unscrutinized. There were many chefs far more groundbreaking than her, many more daring with what they were willing to put on a plate, but no one else who could summon such astonishing results from their decisions. Cindy realized that the world where great and heavenly things like this can exist is only possible because everything cannot be known, and perfection cannot be experienced. But the work of brilliant people like Eva makes people doubt that, for just a moment. Eva was a part of her, yet existed in this remarkable form because Cindy had no part of her. It would have been something to grab her daughter's hand like a mother back from the dead, and instantly fill the abyss that a mother's absence might have created in her heart. But there seemed to be no knowledge in the eyes across from Cindy that such an abyss even existed. It was up to Cindy to remind Eva's subconscious that she'd been abandoned and force this complex emptiness into the center of her beautiful life, whether her daughter knew of Cynthia Hargreaves or not. Cindy realized
that this was the critical action beneath the reasons she was here, and one thing that was inevitable if she were to earn what her heart had desired. They loved you, didn't they? Your parents?
Yeah, very much.
Cindy exhaled. She felt her legs shaking and grabbed her knees. She looked at her beer bottle on the ground.
You could have been much worse off.
I suppose. They did their best, though.
No, that's not what I mean. You could have been raised by a bad mother.
Well, I wasn't. The only bad part is that